Stephen, she said, you go to church. Do they still believe in the devil there?
Some do, said Stephen, though I wouldn't say the vicar did.
The devil's out of fashion, I said.
Then he might be flattered if I believed in him, and work extra hard for me. I'll sell him my soul like Faust did.
Faust sold his soul to get his youth back, said Thomas.
Then I'll sell mine to live my youth while I've still got it, said Rose. Will he hear me if I shout, or do I have to find a devil's dyke or devil's well or something?
You could try wishing on our gargoyle, I suggested, although she was so desperate she was, well, more playful than I'd seen her for a long time, and I wanted to encourage her.
What we call our gargoyle is really just a carved stone head high above the kitchen fireplace.
We could haul you up on the drying rack, Rose, said Thomas.
Thomas held the rope while Rose sat on the middle of the rack and tested its strength. I went and sat beside her, feeling that if the weight of both of us didn't break anything, it would be safe for her alone. I knew from the look in her eye and her deep flush that it wasn't any use trying to dissuade her. We bounced about a bit, and then she said, "Haul me up." Thomas and Stephen hauled. The carved head must be over 20 feet up, and as she rose higher and higher, I had an awful feeling in my stomach. And I don't think I had realized until then how very dangerous it was. When she was within a few feet of the head, Stephen called up, "That's as high as the rack'll go." She reached up, but couldn't touch the head. Then she called down, "There's a foothold here. It looks as if there were steps once." The next second she had leaned forward, grasped a projecting stone, and stepped onto the wall. "Hurry up and get it over," I called. She only had to take one step up the wall to reach the head.
"He's no beauty at close quarters," she said. "What shall I say to him, Cassandra?"
"Pat him on the head," I suggested. "It must be hundreds of years since anyone showed him any affection." Rose patted him. I got the lamp and held it high, but it was still shadowy up there. She looked extraordinary, almost as if she was flying up the wall or had been painted on it. Just then, a car on the Godsend Road hooted loudly. I saw Rose start. "Get me down," she cried in a queer voice and flopped onto the rack. For one awful second, I feared the boys might not be expecting the strain, but they were ready and lowered her carefully. As soon as her feet were near the ground, she jumped off and sat down on the floor.
"You never did wish, did you?" I asked.
She laughed. "Oh, I said a few private things, all right." Topaz came downstairs just then, in her black oilskins, sou'wester hat and rubber boots, looking as if she were going to man the lifeboat. She said her dyed tea gown had shrunk so much she couldn't breathe in it, and Rose could have it. Then she strode out, leaving the door wide open.
"Don't swallow the night, will you?" Thomas called after her.
"Your luck's started already," I told Rose, as she dashed upstairs to try the tea gown on. Thomas went to do his homework in his room, so I thought I might as well start my bath and asked Stephen if he minded me having it in the kitchen. He said he would help me get the bath ready. "Oh, but it's full of dye," I remembered. We emptied it and Stephen swilled it out. We carried the bath to the fire, and Stephen baled hot water from the copper and helped me to make a screen of clothes horses with the green sheets on. I was just getting into the bath when Heloise whined at the back door and had to be let in. Of course, she wanted to come to the fire, which was a slight bore as she is no asset to a bath. Her loving paws are apt to scrape one painfully. However, she seemed sleepy and we settled down amicably. It was wonderfully cosy inside my tall, draught-proof screen. I had just started serious washing when there was a thump on the door. I was groping for the towel when I heard the door open. Heloise let forth a volley of barks and hurtled towards it. It was a miracle she didn't knock the clothes horses over. The next few seconds were pandemonium, with Hel barking her hardest and two men trying to soothe her. Mercifully, Heloise quietened down after a minute or so.
"Didn't you hear someone say, 'Come in?'" said one of the men, and I realized that he was an American.
It was a pleasant voice, like the nice people in American films, not the gangsters. He called out, "Anyone home?" But the other man told him to be quiet, adding, "I want to look at this place first. It's magnificent."